Welcome to Marilyn Solutions with Reverend Marilyn, the speaker for the new millennium. Join Marilyn as she talks with guests offering a wide range of talents and information. And now, here's Marilyn.
Welcome to Marilyn Solutions. I'm so glad you're with joining me. Our guest today is Kimberly Clark Sharp, author of After the Light. She drove down here from Seattle and had trouble with my directions, but we finally got her here just before airtime, so we're so thrilled she's here. And if you have questions and comments about near-death experiences, she's going to be here to answer anything that you want to talk about. Our phone number for Pierce County is 253-584-1480. And for King County, toll-free, 253-804-5765. I want my listeners to tell the sponsors, and you hear those between the times of our show, that they're here helping us keep on the air and that you heard them, so they'll know that you're getting the message and they're there to help you and take care of your needs. And I'm really thrilled to say my webpage is getting changed and I'll be able to do spiritual counseling on the Internet shortly. If people are trying to contact me over the Internet, it's Marilyn, M-A-R-I-L-Y-N. At Angelica's Gifts, one word, angelicasgifts.com. And you can also call me at 253-845-4907 for counseling classes and other areas of my expertise, which we talk about on the air here. So we're so glad today that you're listening, because Kimberly Clark Sharp is a terrific gal, and she's very, very perky little gal. I love to talk with her. We just have great times. I'm pleased to introduce her today to my program. And she's the author, as I said, After the Light, The Spiritual Path to Purpose. Her book is endorsed by Dr. Raymond Moody, Betty Eady, who is a local person, Dr. Kenneth Ring, and Dr. Melvin Morse of the University of Washington, right? Isn't that where he's located?
Yes, he's a pediatrician in Seattle.
Right. And Kimberly is the founder of Seattle International Association of Near-Death Studies, the world's oldest and largest support group for near-death experiences since 1982. She was named one of the 40 most influential people under the age of 40 in the Pacific Northwest in 1987. Kimberly founded the Department of Social Work at the world's first bone marrow transplant center. She is a pioneer in the field of critical care social work and an international conference and workshop speaker, and has published in many journals, textbooks, and magazines. Kimberly is a consultant to news and the entertainment industry. She is a cancer survivor. Kimberly is a co-teacher for the Terminal Illness Seminar at the School of Medicine, University of Washington, since 1977. And for the last two decades, she's been a clinical assistant professor in the School of Social Work at the University of Washington. She received her Master of Social Work in 1976 from the University of Washington. And Kimberly today is a happy wife and a mother.
Yes, and after all that, well, gotta go. Time's up.
I hope not.
It's been a pleasure.
Hope not, because we have some wonderful questions here today. And we do want people to call in. Pierce County, 253-584-1480. And King County, pick up that phone. It's not as heavy as you think. 253-804-5765. Kimberly, why did you finally decide to tell your whole story, After the Light, and what distinguishes your book from other accounts of near-death experiences?
Well, for one, it's funny.
It is.
And for others, it's currently out of print, so there you go.
I thought you were getting it back in print.
Yes, it's going into its third printing this summer.
Good.
The book is available on tape, however, through HarperCollins, and that can either be downloaded off of any internet site like Amazon.com, or if you want a tape, you can pop into your car. The ARE, the Association
for Research, Research
and Enlightenment. Thank you for that. Blah, 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 blah. They are selling audio tapes, and they can be reached at an 800 number. I can give now, or just give me a heads up, I'll give it later.
Well, you can give it now, and we can repeat it at the end of the program when people get their pencils if they don't have it with them now.
Okay, so if this hour absolutely fascinates you, you've just got to have more Kim. Then, until the book is reavailable this summer, at 1-888, which is toll free, 812-3386. They'll be happy to sell you and ship you an audio tape.
Yeah, tell them you heard about it on the radio show, that Solutions with Marilyn, because they're going to be selling some of my audio tapes, and they're also being put on CDs, and so they can also get some of my programs when they call for yours.
You're higher tech than me.
My son wanted to be an audio engineer, and he is in his heyday right now putting them on CDs for me.
Oh, well, you're very fortunate.
I have a great son.
So, yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, you were telling me
why am I here?
Yeah, you were telling us about this book you wrote and how
why
it was
is it
different.
Yes, yeah. Other than being unavailable and funny.
Also scary.
Okay.
It has ghost
stories
in it.
Yes, it is. Well, here's...
Okay, tell us more.
Yeah. Back to the question again and how it's different from other books is that, to the best of my knowledge, I'm the only person that I've ever heard of who's... had a near-death experience in addition to having done some bona fide research at the University of Washington. It's publish or perish, so there's that. And I'm an MSW, also a clinician, and do run the world's oldest and largest support group. So sort of the triple crown of near-death experiencers is, you know, that I can actually provide counseling legally and with a full Washington State license. And contribute to the body of knowledge such as it is, which is actually piddly compared to what it could be. And, of course, having had a near-death experience can look people in the eye and say, I know how you feel.
I think that's really important. I find with my counseling, if I've gone through that experience myself, people relate really well with me. And it seems like we have an instant bonding.
Yeah. Actually, the original title of After the Light was called The Woman Who Would Not Die.
Oh, I like that.
Well, thanks. I think my next book I'll use that title because, that's just something I have up my sleeve anyway. But it seems like I was sent back to almost die a lot so that, because I am in medicine, so that I can look people in the eye for a variety of reasons and say, I know how you feel. And most particularly being a cancer survivor, which I'm very proud of, it was hard work to get through treatment. And it's a club that, of course, I don't want to be a part of. But now that I am happy for that experience even. I'm happy for all my experiences because they're all life experiences. And in 1970, I should have died. So I've got 32 years under my belt of living that I wouldn't have had otherwise, and I'm very grateful for that.
Wonderful. All right, Kim, what happened?
What the heck happened? That's the only question I ask you to ask me. What the heck happened? So 1970, state of Kansas, where I'm from. I was at the Department of Motor Vehicles with my dad. By the way, in perfect health, I was a... young enough to be getting my first driver's license and, again, feeling great. But while I was waiting for my number to come up, which is actually a pun, I began to feel goofy and told my dad I wanted to sit down, and he said there weren't any chairs. And actually, Marilyn, that's all I remember in what I call topside, which is the realm of the five senses. So I'll explain physically what happened before I get to the good stuff.
Okay.
In exiting the building, my dad noticed that my complexion was what he called white on white. And I then went unconscious, fell into and through his arms, literally as we were leaving the building. But that did put me outside on a sidewalk. And there happened to be a uniformed nurse passing who ran over, determined I didn't have a pulse and wasn't breathing. Volunteer fire department from Shawnee Mission, Kansas was called, as well as an ambulance from a hospital in Kansas City, Missouri, which was the largest urban population. Volunteer fire department arrived first. They had a brand new portable ventilator, which they applied, but it was on backwards.
Ooh.
And instead of ventilating, it sucked out whatever oxygen was still left in my body. This was a bad thing.
Yes, I can tell.
according to my dad, they flicked a switch, started pumping air in, but my lungs had collapsed sufficiently that air didn't enter my lungs. it found its way. We have two expandable organs, by the way. Mm-hmm. One, as I age, is failing me. That's our bladder. And the other stretchable organ, which is serving me way too well, is skin. It can stretch a whole lot, especially around the waistband. So what happened, though, is that the air that was being forced into my body found its way to my skin, and I literally inflated like a human balloon.
Ooh.
A condition called epithelial emphysema, which is pretty much fatal. So the medics turned to my dad and said, I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. And mm-hmm. I'm married to a Seattle paramedic, and I know that's medic talk for she's dead in a stump.
Oh!
Only a physician.
They're just being tactful.
Yeah, they're being tactful and legal. So at that point, though, a man that my dad always called the Good Samaritan came through the crowd that had gathered by then, swearing like a mule skinner, I guess. So he must have been from Tacoma, huh? Oh, joke. And he did what we now know is CPR, and after a while turned again to my father and said, I'm not getting a blankety-blank thing. At that point, my dad's memory fails. At some point, however, the ambulance had arrived from St. Luke's Hospital in Kansas City. My body was thrown into the back, to great cheers from now the ever-growing crowd, because I had started breathing on my own.
Wow.
My dad doesn't remember how, although I was still unconscious. He jumped in. Off we went to the hospital. Things went sour for a while in the emergency room, but, I hate to give the end of the book away, but I survived.
And she's here today. After these breaks, she'll be back to tell us what happened on the spiritual side of this experience. And we're so glad she did start breathing again, but what happened when she wasn't? And that's the question. So stay tuned to these messages, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back to Maryland Solutions. We're so glad you're here today. We're here with Kimberly Clark Sharp, and we're just having a great time. She has a lot of sense of humor, if you've noticed, which is also in her book. And we're wanting to find out in just a minute what happened when she actually had her experience. But we do want to welcome our new sponsor today that's coming on board, which is STOP. And they are there to help you. They have locations in Puyallup, Tacoma, Aberdeen, Shelton, and another one, which hopefully if you call them, they will give you all the locations they're at. But they do a wonderful job. If you've had a DWI or are involved with domestic violence, need help through the courts to get satisfaction for some of their requirements, they're there to help you, and it's a great place to be and to go for that additional help you can't get any other place. So Do let them know that you heard them if you're looking for that kind of information. Well, Kimberly, before we go on with one more thing, I need to tell people that if they are still wanting to get Rodney Romney, Reverend Rodney Romney's wonderful book, Wilderness Spirituality, he left copies here, and he's donated them to the program, and their sale of $25 each goes to support this show, which I thought he was very generous in doing. And if we actually sell all the books he left, then we will have actually paid for a program entirety, which is a very generous thing of him to do. So if you want your copy of Wilderness Spirituality, call me at 253-845-4907 or email me at marilyn@angelicasgifts.com. And that contribution will help continue this show on the air. Or any other contribution you might choose to make to help with this program will also give you the opportunity to suggest a topic or a guest that you want on this show. So there's always wonderful people out there that I might not have heard about, and this is a wonderful way to say, hey, what about this person? We'd like to get them on the air too. If you wish to reach me for spiritual counseling, classes, a reading for you or your party, past life regression, or to talk to someone passed over, give me a call. I also can contact your angels and draw portraits of your guardian angels in pastels. These are available at Crystal Voyage in Tacoma, at Freight House Square, or I can draw your own special angel if you want to order one of those. Call me at 253-845-4907. Now, we're going to get back and find out what really happened.
Okay, so, dead. Should have been end of story, wasn't. This is now my reality. Okay. I could hear a woman's voice to my left saying, "I'm not getting a pulse, I'm not getting a pulse." And I turned to her, and with the same sense of reality with which I'm now speaking, I told her, duh, you know, of course I have a pulse, or I wouldn't be talking to you. She ignored me. This went on for a while, and I found myself in the odd position of actually providing comfort for her and for other voices that I heard around me, although I don't remember seeing anything at that point. And finally, maybe you'd call it a near-death snit, I'm not sure, but I just thought, well, you're not going to pay attention to me. I am out of here. And I found myself in a place that felt like a way station. I knew I was someplace. I knew I was with other somethings, but I couldn't see what was around me because I was surrounded by such dense gray fog. I think this foggy stuff is interesting for a number of reasons, but in World War II, Marilyn, there were more movies made about the afterlife than at any other time in cinema history.
Oh, really?
Yes, and they all have gray, foggy material in them. And I wasn't born then, so it's not like a cultural imprint. I really think that in our collective consciousness, that's something that does resonate with us as we make our transition from what we call life into what we call the hereafter. It was very comfortable. I had a sense that I was waiting. It was a confident sense, like I was waiting for a bus that I knew would be pulling up. And then, boy, this is impossible to describe. None of it's easy, to tell you the truth, but what happened next is impossible, so this is my best shot.
Okay.
A light came, a light of such power and brilliance that it blasted away all of this foggy material, and I found myself in the very center of it. It was brighter than our sun, and I could see. It didn't hurt my eyes, quote-unquote, and it was all love. I was surrounded by such intense, personal, really unconditional love, although that's sort of a modern word, and that's I wasn't processing verbally like that, but in the presence of this light, I said, "Homie, home," which I learned later from my parents that as a toddler, I was firstborn. You have to understand, everything got recorded. Mm-hmm. As a toddler, when we would be away from our house and then we're pulling back in the neighborhood, I'd recognize neighborhood landmarks and say, "Homie, home, homie, home." And that was a boogie-boo moment for my parents. They remembered it. They told me about it later when I said, in the presence of this light, which, by the way, I'm comfortable calling God, I said, "Homie, home," because, Marilyn, that's exactly where I was, as a matter of fact. I got to ask questions of this light. I thought the questions were pretty profound for someone of my limited access to any kind of information at all from the state of Kansas. That was limited. And the answers that I got back were so simple that, well, if I had had a head, I would have smacked it in the, gee, I should have had a V8 sense. But, you know, questions having to do with why are we born, which basically was, you know, well, you volunteered for this. This went on forever because there's no sense of time within the near-death experience. The communication, by the way, was not in English. It didn't involve verbiage at all. It was, the best way I can describe it is that it was a combination of math and music.
Oh, really? Yeah. I've never heard that.
And I'm not skilled in either. I cannot add, subtract, multiply, or divide, and don't ask me to sing. So skeptics say, you know, oh, near-death experiencers get what they do expect. But, you know, I've interviewed personally, eyeball to eyeball, more than 2,000 near-death experiencers, and I've never talked to anyone who got what they expected. So math and music wouldn't have been on my list in terms of communication.
Interesting.
Also interesting that 3 years ago, Newsweek magazine came out with a special issue on child development, and as a mom, you know, I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it advised that parents expose their children to music before age 10 because music and math come from the same parts of the brain. The brain doesn't know how to, in fact, differentiate pretty much between math and music. And that window closes at about age 10. Math becomes more challenging if music exposure hasn't occurred. So I thought that was interesting, too. But then I was told the absolute worst thing possible, and that's that I would be going back. And I did what any fool would do in the presence of the Almighty in such a situation. I said, no.
You brave soul.
And God said yes, and I said no. And, you know, at least I learned it's possible to argue with God. God doesn't mind at all.
I've had an experience where I did that.
Yeah, God will win.
He did. Isn't that amazing?
Funny how that goes. You know, so much for free will. So I was sent back, and I missed my body by about 4 feet, which is sort of ironic because that's when I failed on the driver's test. I couldn't parallel park within 4 feet of the curb.
Oh, wow.
So here I just had the most sacred spiritual experience possible, and all I could think of was a joke, you know, that I couldn't even park myself. So remained there looking at myself in profile until someone, which turned out to be the Good Samaritan, bent over my body, and the moment he put his mouth on mine, I went, most of me anyway, went through his body back into my own. And for listeners who have seen the movie Ghost, it was similar to a scene in that movie. But for me, it wasn't visceral, it was emotional. And I knew everything about the guy as I went through him and realized what had drawn me back through him into my body was, to a degree, the physical touch. But for the most part, it was the compassion he felt for me, which was a form of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just been with the greatest love possible.
Of all time.
So, of course, I was going to gravitate to any semblance of it that I could find, and it was like a beacon. So back in my body, but then very unhappy because I was fully conscious, but my body temperature was at corpse level, and I was fully aware that I was dead. And I was miserable. I was cold. It was dank. I felt trapped, and with that sense of timelessness, it felt eternal. And I begged and begged and begged for the return of God, which finally occurred. Not in the form of a light, but in this math and music communication. And I was told, basically, okay, stop whining already. If you really want to die, here we go. And a window was opened up to my right, and through it was heaven. It was so beautiful. I could actually feel balminess. There seemed to be a sense of temperature and a sea of blue-green grass waving in a breeze and small trees in the distance and a white fence. But the colors were not earthly. They were of a saturation that doesn't exist here.
More vivid? That's what I've heard is it's just so much
beyond
more.
Beyond vivid. Yeah. Alive vivid. And every blade of blowing grass, and there were countless, I mean, because this went on to the horizon. But I was aware of the consciousness of every blade of grass. It was alive. There seemed to be more life where I was looking than there had been in my whole experience on Earth. And of course, gee, my choice, dank, dark corpse. Heaven. Dank, dark, corpse.
So that you did have a choice then, actually.
I finally got a choice. And I chose to go through the window, knowing that it was my border, that once through I wouldn't get back. And I was just about all the way through when, long-standing joke, you know, the God watches television and loves Columbo. So, you know, at the end of every Columbo episode, how he turns on his heels and spins and nails the murderer with one more question. Well, that was God. And God was basically saying, da-da-da-da-da, before you make a complete decision, I want to show you a few things. And in a series of flashes, I saw my future. I didn't have a life review. I actually had a life preview. And I saw first scenes, and I could just best describe them as where mountains met water. So I knew it wasn't Kansas. And then I saw portraits of people, most of whom had captions like best friend, coworker, next door neighbor, but they were total strangers. And then I saw activities, and I saw myself actually being of service, something I hadn't experienced ever, really. I hadn't done a nice thing for anybody that I knew of, and just sort of living my life and being immature. I thought the service looked interesting, so I chose life. Came back and been choosing life big time ever since. Although I'm not afraid of death, I have to say, that doesn't frighten me. I know that I'm going to be more alive in a way than I am in my body. But, you know, in fairness, I am afraid of dying. You know, the verb's got some unpleasant connotations. I have a list of how I, you know, don't want to check out, like no dark alleys, no fires. You know, I'm very human in my reactions to dying. But once the process of dying is over, it is homey home again.
Well, we're going to take a break here, and this is just really an exciting program today. We know you don't want to miss a moment of it. And if you have a question, call 253-584-1480. And King County, toll-free, 253-804-5765. Stay tuned to find out what happened after this experience. That's when some really interesting things took place. You'll get your surprises, so stay tuned after these messages. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Marilyn Solutions, and we are having a rousing day today talking about near-death experiences with Kimberly Clark Sharp. If you want to get your message or business information out to the people that are listening to this show or that listen to KLAY at other times of the day, those commercials can be aired. So you can call me and make arrangements to have your message also on the air at 253-845-4907. And I would like to inform our listeners right now that next week we're going to have Kim Miller here. She's a local medium, and she and I are going to swap stories about talking to those that are passed over. I'm looking forward to that because I have some good stories, and I know she does too. So stay tuned next week and be sure that you get to hear Kim Miller. The following week we're going to have Dr. Cherie Moore back again. As you know, she talks with us about domestic violence. This time she's going to talk about her book about relationships, and the book's title is called The True Beauty from Within, and we'll even have a copy for you that week if you choose. So don't miss that show. She's a wonderful lady, and we always enjoy having her here. Now we want to find out from Kim. After your near-death experience, many occurrences happened. In fact, I couldn't put the book down. I literally stayed up later than I planned that night because it was so fascinating. But you had some interesting things, and one of the ones I want you to share about is your a house that you rented and some of the experiences that went on with that. In fact, you had an actual spirit follow you from Kansas out here, didn't you?
Yeah.
Was that the same spirit, or was that a different one?
Oh, heavens, I wouldn't have any idea, but I on that one I'm confident, no, not same spirit. I mentioned that most of me returned to my body through the Good Samaritan, but a part of me remained, in terms of consciousness, a bit outside, which has given me double vision for most of the time since 1970. In that, after my near-death experience, I was able to perceive beings that I had no idea had been there. And it began almost immediately. I recovered and bought a car, 1970s square-back Volkswagen with 4 speeds, because that was cheaper, although I didn't know how to drive a stick shift. So I found second gear and basically lurched my way across country, headed west, because I thought mountains,
very descriptive.
Water. Oh, yes. Things got strange before I got to the toll booth on I-80. or is it I-70? I'm getting my states mixed up. I-70 westbound. In that, I had never left home. I mean, I was terrified. Where was I going? And I had a hamster named Toto that was in a birdcage strapped in the front seat. My point is that I am Dorothy because we headed out, but I became terrified and began to cry and wail about how I hated change and I didn't want to leave and boo-hoo-hoo, I hate change, I hate change. And approaching the toll booth, at that time I-70 wasn't free, there was a big sign that said change needed. And that was my first what I call woo-woo, you know, just very synchronistic, odd, can't help but notice, spiritually transforming event. By the time, though, I got to the West Coast, as it turns out, I was perceiving a being in the car, a guardian angel, a guide, I don't know, who very much guided me, though. Never saw who it was, but in writing After the Light, I got in touch with a companion that I picked up after a tornado outside of Hays, Kansas. Again, the Wizard of Oz comes to mind because I wound up in Seattle, which is, of course, the Emerald City. Mm. But anyway, so Toto and I made it from Kansas.
Gives me goosebumps.
Yeah. What would happen if Dorothy decided to stay in the Emerald City? Well, she'd be Kimberly Clark Sharp. Anyway, I contacted my writing companion. I hadn't been in contact with her in 25 years, found her through her family, said, gee, this is what I've written. I want you to sign off on this. Is this your experience? We had never discussed this, and she said, well, not only did she agree those were the experiences we had while we drove, but that whatever that was stayed with her, and they've been traveling ever since. She's been a grasshopper.
Ooh.
She's lived all over the planet. Anyway, I made it into Seattle, finally, and rented a house, which turned out, for lack of a better word, which is bloody haunted.
Oh, and the story is something else.
Yeah, it was a terrifying place, and I lived there for years. A housemate, again, that I had contacted to sign off on these stories, when I said, you know, why in the heck do you think we stayed in that house for so long? And this is a physician, by the way, in Bellevue, Washington, who at this time who said, just plainly, the house had us. But I began to be stalked, I mean, outright stalked by a demon. And sorry, listeners, I just don't know how else to put it. Negative energy works for me. But a terrifying, full-blown evil spirit that was getting closer and closer and closer to me by imitating friends and dates of mine. Oh, it just went on and on. And
you even imitated your sister, didn't you?
Yeah. That was actually the first time any kind of imitation of another human happened. It was as my sister. The only thing is, though, evil is ultimately stupid because it's so darn vain. And this being had coal black eyes. There was no white. It was just gelatinous black, and like, duh, I'm not going to notice that. However, all of this is quite crazy-making, and as a social worker, by then going to graduate school at the University of Washington, I self-diagnosed as crazy. And
what else would you?
Yeah, I decided I was a highly functional schizophrenic, and would have believed that to this day, except that my experiences weren't in isolation. I was having them in gatherings, even in dinner parties in my house. My house was an absolute fun house, if you like, creepy and scary. You know, magenta smoke drifting through the house, lights flickering off and on in different parts of the house, not related to any kind of circuitry. All of this well witnessed by neighbors, by friends, by visitors, by the police, who I called umpteen times. Finally blasted out of that house, thought that I was leaving all of those experiences behind, but whatever was stalking me came right with me. And that lasted for 10 years until 1980, when I finally had the spiritual strength to vanquish it. But I have to add, Marilyn, that all along the way with the scary stuff was the presence of angels. And if I were not seeing the negative energy aspects, the demonic stuff, I wouldn't have seen the angelic things. They were paired. And to see an angel, you know, I've talked to people who've seen angels, and sometimes they sort of just rattle it off. Oh, yes, I see angels. I cannot do that. Whenever I've seen an angel, I talk about dysfunctional. I mean, I can't do anything except just be jaw-dropped and awestruck and cry, and it's just so awesome.
They've saved my life many times. In my book, I have a story about angels saving me. And one of the times just recently is demonic forces were pulling me literally on one side towards the deeper darkness with Satan or whatever you want to describe that as, and the angels are literally pulling me on the other side, and I'm in the middle of this tug of war. So I know what you're saying.
Sorry to hear that. Obviously, angels
won. Obviously,
yes,
won. I cried out for help, and that's what I know you need to do today.
Yeah, you know, crying out for help is the best advice I can give to anybody. And you don't even have to form a literal prayer. I talked to a man who was being carted off to hell in a handbasket, so to speak, who had been an atheist, and three times he heard a voice sort of outside of his head saying, pray, and two times of those three times he was too stubborn to pray and too proud, and finally was so miserable and so terrified, he said, okay, didn't know a prayer, so he did the Boy Scout oath and the national anthem.
That's terrific.
But the prayer was in his heart.
That's the intent.
Yes, and he was rescued.
The most important spot is in your heart.
Yeah, so to get out of an icky situation, pray, pray, pray.
And ask for help. In fact, I was screaming for help in my case. I was scared. Really
Warrant. Yeah. Screaming would be an appropriate thing to do, actually.
Oh, well, you have some interesting things that happened in that house. You were trying to paint out that black spot.
That's how it all started. It was sort of a dark stain in a closet, and I couldn't get near my own closet, a walk-in closet. It was a cold spot, and it was creepy. And I did paint over it, but then the spot came back, and that seemed to be like the center of the house. And by moving in, it was a house that had been abandoned, an old farmhouse, and the owner was interested in someone moving in and staying there for a while, and said, you know, he'd pay for everything to get it fixed up. And it was a house absent of life, which was interesting. You know, you move into a house that hasn't been lived in for a while, expect, you know, the occasional cobweb or something, but it was just absent. But it was really a dormancy. And if someone else had moved in, would they have had the same experiences? Yes, because there were renters before me. I learned all this from the neighbors after the effect. It was just, why me? I think I was sensitive to that kind of energy. At the same time, I got out of graduate school, started working at Harborview Medical Center on the critical care unit there, and found plenty of distractions working with dying people who sometimes were plagued by frightening near-death experiences. And again, I could look them in the eye and say, I know how you feel. And all of this led to me starting what is now, boy, the longest name on record, the Seattle International Association for Near-Death Studies, which is a branch of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, which is a worldwide organization, clearinghouse and research group for the subject of near-death experiences in Seattle, which is real close to Tacoma.
Right, I drive up there.
Yes.
I started going up there before you knew who I was.
Yeah, I know. You're incognito in the back row when I finally noticed. Introduced yourself to me not that long ago, Marilyn. If people would like more information, the number in Seattle is, get that pen, area code 206-525-5489. We also have a website, which is www.seattleiands for the International Association for Near-Death Studies, .org. So www.seattleiands.org, or contact the station.
Yeah, we'll be glad to help you out with that. And we want to have you stay tuned, because she has an interesting story about tennis shoes we want to hear about. And I'll tell you, she's just not even glossing over the ghost stories. You've got to read them, people. You've got to. So get hold of that tape and look for her book when it comes out this summer. Stay tuned, and we'll be back in a minute. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Marilyn of Marilyn Solutions. We're having a rousing time today talking about near-death experiences. And I want to be sure to realize that if you want to reach me for spiritual counseling, classes, readings for you or your party of friends, past life regression, or to speak to those passed over, and you can even check out with your angels what's going on, call me at 253-845-4907. And you can get your own portrait of your own angels if you call me. You also can sponsor this program with your business and services. And please call me at 253-845-4907 and make those arrangements. Remember to let the people that are doing the sponsoring of this program between our breaks, let them know that you've been tuning in and you are listening to them on the radio. They'll be pleased you do. We want to go back with Kim right now and find out about the tennis shoes story. And if she has something more about the ghosts, that's fine, too. But
tell what your interest is.
I'll tell you, they spook. You know, I've read lots of stories, and I'm not a big fan of ghosts, but hers were fascinating. So anyway, if you want to go on with the tennis shoes, we'll let you.
Well, only because this is the story that no skeptic has gotten around.
Okay.
It was too witness. But in 1977, while working at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle, which is our local trauma center, so to be there you have to be real sick, on the coronary care unit, a woman from the Yakima Valley area was admitted. Her name was Maria. She did not speak English. She was Hispanic, a migrant worker in the big city for the first time, and had herself one huge heart attack. So she was under my care. I was the social worker, and we got to know each other a bit just in the course of finding financial resources for her, locating her family, so on and so forth. We built a relationship on my un poco español. And then the third day after she was admitted, she went into cardiac arrest. I observed her resuscitation myself from the doorway. Pretty easy resuscitation, as trauma centers go. She was resuscitated by an even dozen people. I left her room when she was still unconscious but stable. At the end of the workday, I was paged back to the coronary care unit. The nurse in charge said that Maria had regained consciousness and was so agitated they were afraid she'd flip back in cardiac arrest. So, Kim, go in and find out what's the problem. The problem was that she had been out of her body during her resuscitation, and she described lots of locations to me, but the corker was that she found herself on another side of the building from where her room was, outside, floating up against the building next to a ledge where there was a large dark blue tennis shoe. She described in detail how the little toe part was scuffed up and how the lace went under the heel. And she was agitated because she wanted somebody to go out and get the shoe. She knew it was there. She just wanted others to know it was there. Harborview, in case you haven't been up the road, is a huge, huge facility. I walked all the way around, didn't see a shoe, but I noticed that pigeons were flying onto ledges, and I couldn't see them land, which meant that I had to go into the building and just start looking
out
through
windows.
out the windows themselves. And, you know, my luck, I started out on the wrong side, but eventually worked my way to the west side of the building. And eventually to a window where I looked down, and there was indeed this dark blue tennis shoe. And out the window, about a half a mile away, was Smith Tower. And then, of course, Elliott Bay, Puget Sound, and the Olympic Mountains. There was no way. I'd already established from the ground I couldn't see a shoe. And maybe, you know, I could have told myself she had somehow gotten access to an upper floor of Smith Tower before being admitted to the hospital, where with binoculars or a telescope she had spotted a shoe on a ledge and remembered it just in case she had a large heart attack and was admitted to that healthcare facility and could fool some social worker like me. But that was such a stretch, in addition to being a long sentence. So I had to conclude that she had indeed been out of her body while she was resuscitated, and I grabbed that shoe and went back down to the coronary care unit. Of course, showed everybody that she was the shroud of Turin of Harborview for a long time. That was such hardcore evidence that there is something about our bodies that pops out when we are under such stress. Now, I've since learned that it's not just near-death experiences. That's only the most radical on the yardstick. But that stress, emotionally as well as physically and spiritually, can also pop our consciousness outside of the flesh that we call our body, where we begin to perceive objects and others, sometimes close to us, sometimes at a great distance.
I had an experience as a child, and I didn't understand this until just a few years ago, that I popped out of my body and went downtown to Seattle to look in the window of Frederick and Nelson's because I had won an art contest, and my mother would not take me to see my little statue of my cat sitting in the window. It had won first prize in the Seattle Humane Society sculpturing animal contest. And I wanted to go, and she wouldn't take me, and so I went anyway.
Well, gee, considering you had no other way to get there, I thought that's pretty creative, actually, Marilyn. Kind of cool.
I've had some other experiences, too, but that was the first one I realized now.
Out-of-body shopping. The first time I've heard this, by the way.
Well, to look at my prize.
Yeah, right.
And I wanted to see the ribbon.
Yeah, I actually did talk to a fellow on University Avenue in the University District in Seattle, who was in Nordstrom used to have a shoe shop on the Ave. And,
yes.
And while he was being resuscitated half a block away, he actually did float down and window shop at Nordy's. And that is now my favorite near-death account, by the way.
Oh, come on. Now,
another kind of heaven.
Winning a child contest, you know, that was just
okay,
really important.
All right. I will bow to your experience.
Oh, I'm just kidding you. What progress has been made in the area since 1970s when this phenomenon was virtually unknown and easily dismissed by our culture?
Well, of course, we now can coin the term near-death experience.
Right.
That was nice to have something to pin it on. Most recently and electrifyingly out of Holland, a cardiologist has just finished and published in Lancet, which is the most prestigious medical journal on the globe.
Wow.
It's out of Europe. Lancet, for those of you who can get on the internet, published his research over a period of almost 10 years following people who reported a near-death experience and also how they changed afterwards. It's wonderful when physicians, especially worldwide, start taking an interest in doing proper research. I'm hoping to live long enough to see near-death experiences move from the askance look, you're crazy, or making it up, or it was the medication, or you're on drugs, or you need the attention, or on and on and on and on. I've got a list of 19 ways for skeptics to account for near-death experience, and none of them really hold water. I want to live long enough to see near-death experiences just being part of what's routinely taught in healthcare systems, that it's just a normal and natural part of making the transition from what we call life into death.
I think that's a beautiful purpose and mission. I really approve of that, and we've talked a little bit about that on some past shows, about what happens to the soul.
And we haven't even gotten to who we go with, the angels and deceased loved ones. You're going to have me back. I could spend an hour just talking about deceased loved ones part they play at the end of our lives.
That would be, well, we'd love to have you back, Kimberly. We'll set a date, and we'll plan on that. And we have just a few minutes left, but we wanted to people to know how to get hold of your audio tape.
Again, the audio tape is either online through Amazon.com, published by HarperCollins, or toll-free through the Association of Research and Enlightenment, the ARE, at 1-888-812-3386. And again, the Seattle International Association for Near-Death Studies, or Seattle IONS. We meet on the first Saturday of every month, free, at area code 206-525-5489 or www.seattleions.org.
I want her to know, Kim, the first time I went to IONS to a meeting, a lady said, "You have to go." And this is before we even talked about the show. This is several years ago. And I went up very skeptical about this place I was going. And I sat down. and the whole ceiling was full of angels.
Yeah.
And I just relaxed, and it was just like a little bit of heaven for that particular afternoon. I was thoroughly delighted. It was a wonderful experience, and I've loved going back every time since.
Yeah, it's what I call limp in, leap out. And there are about 80 to 150 people there, and they pack their own angels, too, so it can get pretty crowded in the room with invisibilities. It's a wonderful experience.
Right. Well, I want to thank Kimberly Clark Sharp for being here today with her appearance. I've had a wonderful time, Kimberly.
I have, too. Thank you, Marilyn.
And for being on Solutions with Marilyn, and hope you people listening got some new information or understanding you didn't have before. It's been such an entertaining full hour. And we want to thank you for taking the time to come down here from Seattle. And sorry you got lost. My directions weren't quite accurate. I have to own up to it.
Got here in time.
And we want you to get Wilderness Spirituality, your chance to get a wonderful book with real, real information about spirituality, not necessarily just what's on the best bestseller to make money. So do call me at 253-845-4907 for your copy. Stay tuned next Wednesday. We'll see you on Maryland Solutions at noon, this radio station. Have a great day. The sun is out.
You've been listening to Maryland Solutions. Listen again next week for another informative show with guests from coast to coast. For a copy of today's program or a copy of her new book, Roses Have Thorns, and videotapes on empowerment and spiritual tools for healing domestic violence, write to KLAY in care of Maryland Solutions, 10025 Lakewood Drive Southwest, Tacoma, Washington, 98499. Or visit her website at Maryland@angelicasgifts.com.
Many people are looking for a new direction and a lift in spirit. Hello, I'm Reverend Marilyn, a counselor, teacher for over 30 years, and a spiritual advisor for addictions, codependency, domestic violence, past lives, and holistic healing. Join me every Wednesday at noon for Marilyn Solutions, a program sure to be of interest to everyone. We will talk with guests from coast to coast, offering a wide range of talents and information. That's Marilyn Solutions, Wednesdays at noon on your news and information station, KLAY 1180.